This program is brought to you by the Genesis Communications Network, a world leader in talk radio since 1998. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Welcome back to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
1927, 97 years ago as we do this.
I'm so glad we're having this conversation because we're coming up on the centennial, and we've got 3 years to plan for it. And I would hope that anybody who's hearing our voices today, who might be intrigued with the need to celebrate that important centennial in human history, would visit philoday.com and get in touch with me, and we'll figure out how we can run this flag up the flagpole and finally give Philo Farnsworth the credit he's due for his contribution to civilization.
Well, and I should point out that in the early days, when they are putting things together, they have to build it themselves. There's no using off-the-shelf material to make this concept work. No, they have to build the shelf themselves.
I'll give you a good example of that. I mean, that's a very pertinent point. And a lot of this material is fresh with me because sometime in the next 30 days or so, I'm finally going to release the audiobook edition of The Boy Who Invented Television. I've been reading and recording it myself. I'm working with a producer who's editing it, and I've already sent him all the chapters, and it's going to come out soon. And so I've been reading this material, and it's all become very fresh to me again, and I recall some things now that I'd pretty well forgotten, one of which is an example of exactly what you're speaking. Most of the vacuum tubes of the day were what are called triodes. They had three electrodes. And it was the difference in potential between two of the electrodes that produced basic amplification. Well, Phil got an idea to build a pentode with five electrodes. He had to fabricate the socket for a pentode from scratch because they didn't exist. So, yeah, they had to build a lot of things from scratch. It was like assembling a car as you're driving it across the desert or something like that. I'm sorry, I've forgotten that particular analogy.
I was just going to say, and this goes back to people forgetting who Farnsworth was. When I went to college, and this would have been in the late 70s, and maybe it was because this was in the state of Indiana. My professor, the very early, you know, like the first or second, you know, study course that you have to take in broadcasting, told us about Phil Farnsworth and even told us the story about the plowed fields. But that's as far as it went. Name and the field, you know, plowed of the field. At least there was one professor.
There was one. And you know, for me, the name first appeared in 1973. I met the family in 1975. The first work that I did was published in 1977. It's remotely possible, I suppose, that your professor had seen some of the material that I produced by then. It was during that period in the mid to late 70s that the story began to get traction. And, in fact, in 1977, this is how long I've been on this case, because a moment ago we were talking about the centennial in 3 years. For the golden anniversary, the 50th anniversary in 1977, I got together with the family and some of the remaining members of Farnsworth's original lab gang from the 20s and 30s, principally Cliff Gardner, who was the guy who fabricated the image dissector tubes. He was the glass blower. And we recreated from scratch the system that they had built 50 years earlier. Mm. And demonstrated it. We had a media event at the Foothill Museum in Los Altos, California. The event was covered by NBC and CBS. ABC didn't come, but we got air on both the NBC and CBS Evening News. That footage, some of that footage can be found on YouTube now. I've put some of it up, including some video footage of the recreation of that very first transmission from September 7th, 1927. The purple screen, the line flipping up and down on the cathode ray tube. We recreated it from scratch 50 years ago. So you were in the period there in what you described as the late 70s when we were we're just in the early stages of trying to restore this legacy.
And so, of course, I mean, everything just went smoothly from there on out for Farnsworth and his company.
Yeah, it was just a couple of weeks later that he tuned in I Love Lucy for the first time.
There you go. But, I mean, there were some significant pitfalls, though, in this early development.
That would be understating the situation. So. And almost, well, he got to continue on his own for another year. And that first demonstration proved the principle. And again, the way I described it a minute ago, that indeed intelligence, in this case, just a bold straight line, could be transmitted from the bottom of one bottle to the bottom of another. All that did was prove how much work would have to be done before some kind of intelligible image could be transmitted. It was not too much after that. They went to other geometric shapes. They went to triangles. The first real movement that they saw was a couple of weeks or months later when Cliff Gardner, Phil's brother-in-law, Pem's brother, his wife's brother, and the chief glassblower, he was adjusting something in the camera room, and he had a cigarette in his hand, and in the receiver room, they see smoke on the screen. And for first they think that something's on fire, and then they realize that it's just the smoke from Cliff's cigarette, but they can see the patterns and the shapes and the very fine grain in the cigarette smoke very clearly on the receiver. So we're going in incremental steps now to try to get from this very crude proof of principle image to the kind of high resolution image that we would need to have commercial television in our homes. And I think that first transmission was something in the order of 20 lines per frame. And Phil knew right away that he had to have at least 400 lines per frame. The most a mechanical system ever got to was about 30 to 50 lines per frame. So he's already a quantum leap ahead of everything that went before, but he's got a vast terrain to cross before anybody's going to buy a television set.
Let's take that trip, and we'll go into more of how we got from there to here. Here, where you can buy a genuine 4K large screen television set for something like $250 to $300 on sale. How things have changed. A little bit later in the show, we'll talk about T. Townsend Brown himself, an interesting character. So let's go now. Yeah. We're in the early stages of this development. He's made significant breakthroughs. At what point do we get to something where you could look at a TV set and say, ah, that's I Love Lucy?
Roughly 1929 to 30. He demonstrates it. He gets another year, and in the fall of 1928, he demonstrates his system actually for his backers and for the press. So the first press coverage of what Farnsworth has created appears in the San Francisco Chronicle in 1928. It might have been 1929. But that's the period which we're beginning to see something intelligible, but it's still not as sharp as what it needs to be. But the important thing to note here is what we're now doing, what Phil is now doing, what Farnsworth is now doing, is building a rock-solid patent portfolio. His patents were issued, so he applies for the patents in 1930. That stakes his turf, and stakes his claim in the turf, and it took about 2.5 years for the patents to go through the patent office, and they were issued and granted in August of 1930.
We'll get more into the granting of the patents and more as the TV takes shape with Paul, Gene, and okay. Tim. You're in
the Paracast.
Hey, listeners. I want you to have the entire Paracast experience. So I'd like to tell you about After the Paracast. After the Paracast is an exclusive feature for subscribers to the Paracast Plus. With After the Paracast, you never know what's going to happen next. After the Paracast features color commentary, special interviews, and further conversations with Paracast guests. With Paracast Plus, you can download a very special enhanced version of the Paracast also. We do offer exclusive music, videos, and more features are coming. To get more info about subscribing, please visit theparacast.plus. Once again, theparacast.plus. Prices are just $1.50 a week, less than a cup of coffee at your local convenience store. Check out theparacast.plus to learn more about Paracast Plus.
If you're concerned about the power grid and want to generate your own supply of off-grid electricity, this will be the most important message you'll hear this year. Here's why. We now have a small number of solar generators back in stock. These emergency backup systems provide life-saving backup power when you need it most. And unlike gas generators, solar generators run quietly, emit no dangerous fumes, and produce an endless supply of free electricity from the sun. Whether it's wildfires, dangerous weather, power grid issues, or just getting off the grid, you'll never have to suffer through painful power outages again. Even better, all this week, radio listeners get over $700 in free off-the-grid bonuses, too. Go to MySolarBackup.com to learn more and check availability. That's MySolarBackup.com. Look for the free report, Crisis Cooling, how to make absolutely sure your meat, milk, and medicines stay safe and cool in any power outage. Yours free at MySolarBackup.com.
Every day we take steps to keep the people we love safe, but some health risks are easy to miss. Ticks hiding in the yard can spread germs, like the ones that cause Lyme disease. Mice searching for food can spread bacteria that makes us sick. Mosquitoes lay eggs in standing water and can spread West Nile virus and more. Cockroaches are drawn to water in the home, leaving behind allergens that can trigger asthma attacks. Common pests can threaten our health. Learn how to protect your family at pestworld.org.
Do you have difficulty taking supplements? Are you searching for a high-quality, complete nutritional drink that your whole family will love? NutriMedical's Life Support has arrived. All of your daily nutritional requirements in one quick, delicious drink. Dr. Bill Deagle's Life Support is a proprietary blend of vegan protein, activated vitamins, essential minerals, amino acids, probiotics, green tea, digestive enzymes, anti-inflammatories, cancer prevention, detoxification, and much more. Your body will high-five you for this one. Life Support is the best complete nutrition meal replacement on the market. Whether you are an elite athlete, have post-operative challenges, chronic illness, elderly, or a family that just wants a quick, delicious drink, try Dr. Bill Deagle's Life Support for optimized nutrition in one great-tasting smoothie. Just add cold water, almond milk, fruit, or anything else you like. NutriMedical's Life Support. Try our great-tasting chocolate or vanilla today. Call 888-212-8871 or visit us online at NutriMedical.com. NutriMedical.com for the whole family.
You know someone with a drug or alcohol problem? Get help now. Insurance may cover everything. Stop the drug and alcohol nightmare. Call 800-284-0523. Learn how through the Family Medical Leave Act, you can leave your job without losing your job. Locations everywhere. Get immediate help for drug and alcohol problems. Call now. 800-284-0523. 800-284-0523.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
Okay, so he's granted the patents. Paul, what happens next?
All right, so he's granted the patents. Even by then, by the time the patents are granted, he has applied for many more patents. This is the merit in being 6 years ahead of your competition. Anything new you develop to improve what you've started with is going to be another brick in your formidable patent portfolio. So he's continuing to apply for patents and be granted patents over the course of the 1930s. But by now, the Radio Corporation of America gets wind of what's happening on the West Coast. And as we said at the outset, David Sarnoff was determined that he was going to deliver television to the world. That was going to be his legacy. And by 1929, there was one formidable force that stood in his way in a laboratory in San Francisco named Philo T. Farnsworth, because Philo T. Farnsworth had all the patents. So, in April of 1930, a man named Vladimir Zworykin shows up at Farnsworth's laboratory. At the time, Zworykin is working for Westinghouse in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Zworykin is a, like Sarnoff, an emigre from Russia. He's moved, come here from Russia. And as a student in Russia, he had learned of the concept of electronic scanning from a professor there named Boris Rosing. The idea of using cathode ray tubes was not original to Farnsworth. Other people had had the idea, but having the idea is one thing. Having the idea and making it work was everything. Farnsworth was the first to make it work. Zworykin is trying to get his superiors at Westinghouse interested in an electronic approach to television, and there is some evidence that he may have built some tubes, but they were not sufficiently successful that they stimulated any encouragement from his superiors at Westinghouse. But by 1929, David Sarnoff at RCA wants television developed under his roof, and so he learns about Zworykin, who applied for a patent in 1923, which patent, by 1930, is still pending. Are you with me? He applied for a patent. The patent hasn't been granted. The patent office hasn't said, yeah, that'll work. So that patent is still pending, but it's got a 1923 date on it. So
that is weird. It would take that long.
Yeah. Well, there's a reason. Well, maybe we'll get to that, or I'll tell you now. But there's a reason why that patent hadn't been granted. So I don't know if the invitation initiated with Westinghouse or with Zworykin. But remember, Zworykin is working for Westinghouse. And Westinghouse is not governed by a policy like RCA is, that RCA will only collect patent royalties and not pay them. So when Zworykin makes overtures to Farnsworth, it's under the guise of investigating a patent license for Westinghouse. Now, Westinghouse, there's no reason Westinghouse can't get into television. I told you earlier about how the whole communications industry had been divided up between AT&T and GE and RCA. Television wasn't part of that. Television didn't exist. Anybody who wanted to could get into television. So what Farnsworth's business model that he's trying to build is to license patents and to generate revenue for a laboratory that can continue scientific investigations by virtue of the revenues, the royalties from its patents. So when Zworykin approaches them about a possible patent license with Westinghouse, they kind of open the doors for him. And Zworykin spent 3 days at Farnsworth's laboratory in San Francisco. And there are several stories from that, the most notable of which is that when Zworykin was handed a newly fabricated image dissector tube for the first time, he looked at it admiringly and said, "This is a beautiful instrument. I wish that I had invented it." So they show him everything, thinking they're going to get a patent license. And when he leaves Farnsworth's lab, Zworykin goes to a telegraph house in San Francisco, and he sends a 300-word telegram to his laboratory in Pittsburgh with specific instructions for how to build an image dissector tube. And he then, in a 300-word telegram, that's an expensive telegram. So he telegraphs these instructions, and then he goes to Pittsburgh, where they have followed his instructions and fabricated this image dissector tube for him, and then he takes it with him to the RCA laboratories in Camden, New Jersey, and goes to work for David Sarnoff.
That sounds like a classic double cross.
It was. But here's the thing. The language in Farnsworth's patents, the language in the patents is as much genius as the ideas that went into it. And there's one clause in particular. It's claim 15 in 1927-30 patent number 1773980, which describes the electrical image. And that is, I'm sorry, I can't say it right off the top of my head, but it's only a short paragraph. And it basically describes, it articulates that expression of Einstein's photoelectric effect and the ability to scan it into an electrical signal in a vacuum tube in that one paragraph. And as it turns out, over the course of the next several years, you cannot make an electronic television signal without infringing on that language. And this is the lesson that RCA learned the hard way over the course of the next 5 years.
Well, and it's surprising that it happened that way, considering RCA had a ton of money and could throw lawyers at Farnsworth left and right.
Which is exactly what they did throughout the 1930s. The problem that Farnsworth ran into was that RCA was intimidating its radio customers. The people that paid RCA royalties in order to manufacture radios, RCA sort of was basically telling them not to do business with Farnsworth. And then they went ahead and developed a new kind of camera tube. Now, again, I have to emphasize that the critical piece in all of this science is not the ability to make the picture, but the ability to make the signal that makes the picture. It's the camera tube. You can only get as much resolution on the receiving end as you can produce on the camera end.
We are going into the early inventions of TV and how RCA and Darth Vader became involved with Paul, Gene, and Tim. You're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNLive.com today.
Complement your health with hemp-derived cannabinoid oil. We've always believed that the closer to Earth, the better it is for our bodies. Our hemp-derived cannabinoid oil is phytocannabinoid-rich, full-spectrum, and organically grown. Finally, hemp made easy, clean, and effective. GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203. That's right, we cut through the red tape. It's now available at GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203.
What if you could cut your heating bills this winter with your existing wood-burning fireplace and not spend thousands doing it? You can with Great Wall of Fire fireplace grates. Our U.S.-patented, made-in-America Wall of Fire grates increase fireplace efficiency, eliminate fireplace smoke problems, and come with a 30-day money-back guarantee. See our grates in action and get free shipping from walloffire.com or call 800-274-7364. Fireplace heat without fireplace smoke. Walloffire.com.
USA News. News Update.
We just had another hearing, and the trial starts on Monday, which is long before a lot of people thought. The judge wants us to go as fast as possible.
Opening statements scheduled for Monday in Donald Trump's hush money trial in Manhattan. A jury of 12 and 6 alternates sworn in to serve. Trump telling reporters this is a giant witch hunt. Now a disturbing moment outside the courthouse in New York City as a man from Florida lit himself on fire. White smoke billowing from the scene. Police say he posted conspiracy theories online. Detectives now saying he has passed away. President Biden with no public comment about Israel's retaliation strike on Iran. This comes after Iran firing more than 300 missiles and drones into Israel. The president spending the weekend at his home in Wilmington, Delaware. And I'm Laura Winters, USA News.
Hi, this is Sophie Winnick, longtime distributor and user of Longevity products. In the last few years, my family went through a crisis. Everything else in my life, including my business, had to be put on the back burner. Thankfully, life is getting back to normal now. But the one thing I never had to worry about was my business and my monthly commission. I've been a distributor for Longevity for over 17 years, since before it was Longevity. And I've got to say, the most amazing thing about this company is the people. While my family was in crisis, other distributors stepped in and helped my customers, simply because that's what Longevity people do, even for people they don't know. For me, it has never been about getting rich. It was about a product I could stand behind, a company I could count on, and a monthly commission check that has never, not once, been late in 17 years. Longevity is truly a business for everyone, even people who have too much to do. I'm Sophie Winnick. I'm just like you. I have a real life, real ups and downs, but I know I will always have Longevity.
Hi, I'm Dr. Joel Wallach, the Dead Doctors Don't Lie guy, formerly Air Force Lieutenant Colonel, Air National Guard and Reservist. I'm looking for veterans, active duty military personnel to join the 90 for Life crusade to save America. She needs your skills, courage, and loyalty more than ever. Contact GCMteam.com. Because of the financial and healthcare collapse, veterans are currently struggling finding jobs. Frustrated looking for a job? Change your tactics. Join the 90 for Life crusade to save America. Start a healthcare business with FDI Longevity 90 for Life crusade. Contact GCMteam.com. Immediately. We're looking for military specialists who can use a computer, can communicate information, and execute a battle plan. Join the admirals, Navy SEALs, Marines, pilots, Army officers, military police, sheriffs, police officers, firemen, and first responders already enrolled in the 90 for Life Crusade. Contact GCNteam.com now. FDI Longevity will help you apply your military skills to the task of saving America through health and financial programs. Contact GCNteam.com. Enlist in GCNteam.com and save America.
Hi, this is Bryce Abel. I'm the producer of Dark Skies, the co-author of AD After Disclosure, and you are listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
So we go to Camden, New Jersey now, and RCA, and I remember all that stuff and all the stuff they produced. And now you're discussing the continuing development.
You ever seen an image of a Felix the Cat doll on a video screen from like the 1920s?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Yeah. It was very pixelated. Well, you know, big black trunks. But
yeah, exactly. If you ever see that image again, look carefully at it. Now, that was from 1929. Now, bear in mind that Farnsworth has been doing entirely electronic television since 1927 with parallel electronic scan lines. But if you look carefully, what you'll notice is the scan lines are arced. He was still working with a mechanical scanning device. He had a cathode ray tube receiver by that time, but he still didn't have an electronic camera until he visited Farnsworth's lab a year later.
And those mechanical discs, the spinning discs that they used for those things, I mean, they were huge and potentially dangerous.
Exactly. Yeah, they were huge and potentially dangerous. And if they were ever going to transmit a coherent image, the edges of them would have to be traveling somewhere close to the speed of light.
Yeah.
That's how it'd be. But instead, we've got electrons in a vacuum tube traveling at the speed of light. It's a quantum leap in human understanding.
So eventually, though, Farnsworth was able to take this invention and actually start producing television sets as we're familiar with them today.
Yeah. The first public demonstration of television on an entirely Farnsworth-based system was at the Franklin Institute in 1934. That's when television was first introduced to the public. It was stalled for another 5 years before David Sarnoff had his big exhibit at the World's Fair in New York in 1939 and paraded Franklin Roosevelt in front of a television camera and said, now he had sight to sound. But Farnsworth was ready to deliver television to the marketplace in about 1936, and it was stalled for a whole lot of reasons, not the least of which was all this patent litigation. And I will just summarize the patent litigation by saying that the critical litigation around the patents for television was a patent interference in 1934. The decision was delivered in 1935 that in which the patent office agreed that the language describing the electrical image, claim 15 in Farnsworth's patent, belonged to Farnsworth. So that decision ends with the statement, priority of invention is awarded to Philo T. Farnsworth. And in that patent decision, they also make it very clear that the 1923 application that Zworykin was submitting as his proof to having had a prior conception and therefore being eligible to make the count in patent language, that that device simply would not work and was therefore ineligible for a patent. So, in 1939, David Sarnoff has spent somewhere between $13 and $50 million trying to engineer his way around Farnsworth's patents. His board of directors is getting impatient. He finally has to break down and accept a patent license from Farnsworth in 1939, and then he's free to begin introducing television to the marketplace, and then we have a little hiccup called World War II.
Well, didn't they actually, before World War II, they were actually, they had several plants in Indiana. Their main headquarters was in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
That's
and
right.
They were starting to make a go of it until politics.
They did not start making television sets in Fort Wayne until after World War II. They were making, it was the Farnsworth Television and Radio Company, the New York Stock Exchange. And it was Farnsworth Television and Radio Company, FTR, on the New York Stock Exchange. And they started while waiting for television. There were all kinds of machinations going on in Washington around signal standards because everybody had to agree that our television signal was going to have the same frame rate, the same number of lines per frame, going to be transmitted in a certain bandwidth, et cetera, all that had to be settled by the Federal Communications Commission. So Farnsworth Television and Radio had the foresight to wait until those decisions were made before they began manufacturing televisions, and that decision-making was forestalled by World War II. RCA, because they had such an investment in television, rushed it to the marketplace after 1939, and then the standards weren't settled on until after World War II, and all the sets that RCA had manufactured in 1939 and 40 instantly became obsolete and had to be scrapped.
Serves them right.
Yeah, it sure does.
Okay, so in terms of Farnsworth, when did we actually get TV sets that you can buy in your favorite appliance store? I assume this had to be very shortly after World War II ended.
Yeah, I think in 1947 they produced their first commercial models.
But Farnsworth is long ago and far away. What happened?
Okay, well then that will give me just an introduction to the second part of the Farnsworth story. We'll just start with the premise that he started out with that unique perspective born of Einstein's cosmology. He used that cosmology to produce television. While he's producing television, he's learning more and more. I don't think there was anybody in the period who had more hands-on experience with quantum forces than Philo T. Farnsworth. And he observed things in his laboratory that nobody else would have observed just by virtue of his perspective and his experience. And in starting in, he he kind of left Fort Wayne. He set up a laboratory on a farm in Maine. He sat out the war, and now he's developing his own cosmological ideas. And while Fermi and Oppenheimer and Teller and the gang are making bombs, he's starting to think about how to control the reaction of a star in a jar to produce controlled nuclear fusion. In fact, he was invited to participate in the Manhattan Project. And he said to his wife, "I think they're trying to build a bomb, and I want no part of it." Because he was already beginning to see how the very same process that drives the sun and every star in the heavens could be contained on Earth to produce enormous amounts of electrical energy. And then he went to work on that in the 1940s. He got Einstein's personal blessing in 1948. He had another conception in 1953. And then he went to work on it again 6 years later in 1959. And he was controlling fusion reactions in a very small, almost desktop device in the early 1960s.
But what about his TV manufacturing? What happened with that?
Well, the company faltered after World War II. They took on a lot of excess production capacity and were turning out a lot of hardware for the military, communications gear for the military. So they had all this excess capacity. And then when the war ended, the economy contracted, and the Farnsworth Television Radio Company, before they could even begin to make the shift into commercial television production, the standards were arrived at in 45, I guess 46. The company faltered. It fell on hard times because they had all this excess capacity, and all of the debt that they had taken on to acquire all this excess capacity, and now they were unable to meet the market demands. So they had... There were some other extenuating circumstances, not the least of which is a kind of a legendary one that David Sarnoff prevailed on some of the parts manufacturers to put Farnsworth's orders at the bottom of the list.
Let's break it there, and we'll have a little bit more discussion about Mr. Farnsworth in our next segment before getting to Mr. Townsend Brown with Paul, Gene, and Tim. You're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Do you need a website? Well, you can get a great deal on hosting services with Namecheap's legendary coupon code. They're offering substantial hosting discounts on shared hosting, business hosting, VPS hosting, reseller hosting, and even dedicated servers. Namecheap is preferred by millions. It's backed by a money-back guarantee. Use the coupon code LEGENDARY to cash in on the special deal at Namecheap.com, Namecheap.com.
First came Attack of the Rockoids, and it was a critically acclaimed success. And now there's The Coming of the Protectors. A former military intelligence man is contacted by a space woman in a dream. A dream that turns out to be a nightmare, because evil forces on her distant planet are planning to conquer the Earth. This is gripping science fiction of the classic kind. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors. Find out more at Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids, R-O-C-K-O-I-D-S.com.
It's happening daily. We're being conned by the institutions we used to trust. The mainstream media is distracting us with meaningless headlines instead of focusing on the harsh realities facing American families. Time is short before something big happens, and that's why so many folks are preparing. They're becoming self-reliant by investing in emergency food storage from My Patriot Supply. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and secure 4-week emergency food kits for each member of your family. Each kit contains tasty breakfasts, lunches, and dinners, averaging over 2,000 calories per day. Save $50 on each 4-week food kit you purchase. Plus, get free shipping on Ready Hour 4-week emergency food kits. You're not ready if it's not Ready Hour foods. At My Patriot Supply, you can also get solar power generators, water filtration units, heirloom seeds, and survival gear. Order by 3 p.m. and your unmarked boxes ship the same day. Shop MyPatriotSupply.com today. MyPatriotSupply.com.
I am a non-attorney spokesperson representing a team of lawyers who help people that have been injured or wronged. If you've been involved in a serious car, truck, or motorcycle accident or injured at work, you have rights and you may be entitled to money for your suffering. Don't accept an offer you get from an insurance company until you talk to a lawyer. And we represent some of the best personal injury lawyers you can find. Tough lawyers that will fight to win your case. And they're so good they stake their reputation on it by only getting paid if you win. So if you've been in a serious car, truck, or motorcycle accident or hurt on the job, find out today for free what kind of compensation you may be entitled to. Call the legal helpline right now.
800-524-3810. 800-524-3810. 800-524-3810. That's 800-524-3810.
People often write to tell us what has happened for them since starting Extendivite. Allow me to read a few highlights. Extendivite works in keeping my blood pressure in the normal range. I have been using Extendivite for many years. Great product. I use regularly and I rarely get sick. This product has relieved what appeared to be angina pain in my chest and shortness of breath after climbing stairs. I'm quite happy about it. My husband, son, and I have been using this product for a few months now, and we have noticed an improvement in our joints and blood pressure. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit extendivite.com. That's extendivite.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Hi, this is Tracy Torme, screenwriter, producer. You're listening to Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
So Darth Vader rears his ugly head again and does something to screw up the manufacturing process for Farnsworth by making it difficult or impossible for them to get the parts they need.
And so the company falters and was acquired for a nominal exchange of stock by the newly emergent ITT, International Telephone and Telegraph. And that was 1949, and it became a subsidiary of ITT. They immediately took the word television out of the name, made it the Farnsworth Capehart Company. Capehart was the plant that they first acquired in 1948. It went through a couple of reiterations. Eventually, television was dropped altogether, and by about 1951 or thereabouts, the ITT was completely out of the television manufacturing business, and Farnsworth had nothing more to do with television.
Mr. Farnsworth, interesting to see where he connects in a distant way with Oppenheimer and all that stuff.
It is not insignificant. This is why we need to pay attention to this guy. And I'll go back to what I said earlier at the very start when we talk about why don't we know his name. And the first answer I gave you is because he was not inclined to dwell on his past achievements because he was already focused on the next big thing. And by late 1940s, the next big thing was controlled nuclear fusion as the next way that man on Earth will produce energy for his industry.
Which is significant for the person addressed in your second book, T. Townsend Brown. There is a connection.
I do believe the stories are of a piece, and that between these two stories, we are looking at the missing pieces of the technology. How can I put this? That if mankind is destined for the stars, in these two stories, we have the embodiment of the missing pieces of that destiny.
T. Townsend Brown, tell us about him.
All right, so I'll go back to one of the first things I said about Farnsworth, which is that he was born into a new cosmological paradigm. that began with Albert Einstein in 1905, when we suddenly have a new concept of how the universe works. Like Farnsworth, who was born in 1906, like Oppenheimer, who was born in 1904, Thomas Townsend Brown was born to a wealthy family in Zanesville, Ohio, in 1905. So he also grew up under the umbrella of that same new cosmological paradigm. He proved himself to be an electrical prodigy at a very young age. There's a story that opens the book where a visitor to the family's home sees a 10-year-old boy out in the front yard simply scooping earthworms off the top of the soil to go fishing. And when the visitor asks how he's able to pull these worms off the surface instead of digging for them, he says, "Well, I've electrified the fence. And the worms don't like the electricity, so they're just squirreling up to the surface, and I'm just picking them up." So he's already demonstrated a unique capacity at an early age. He's building radio sets as a teenager. He actually had one encounter with the National Security Establishment during World War I because he had a radio in his backyard, and they thought he might be sending or receiving signals from Germany. So he actually had a visit from, like, the Naval Intelligence Services, which was really the only intelligence service we had at the time. And his story is interesting and parallels Farnsworth in another way. He had a very kind of, he had all kinds of means. He could have gone to school, but he didn't fit well into an academic environment. And I would attribute that to the fact that he already had his own way of kind of seeing how things worked, and it didn't fit into an orthodox institutional environment. The best example of that is he actually spent some time at Caltech in Pasadena, California, and the way he describes it, every time he would get an experiment built, they would reach the end of whatever the class period was, and he'd have to take it apart and put it back together again the next day. Was that kind of orthodox institutional operations that he found it difficult to work under. So he has a kind of a spotty education. But the genesis of the Brown story is an observation he makes, I believe, while he was at Caltech, when the class is experimenting with something called a Coolidge tube, which is a high-voltage X-ray tube, and it has what I describe as asymmetric electrodes. There's a large electrode on one end, smaller electrode on the other end. And when this I'm going to simplify the story for time, but at some point he observes that when this tube is placed, is suspended rather than bolted into a chassis, is suspended from a harness. And what he notices is that when the voltage is applied to it, the tube jumps. It has a thrust in one direction, and that's his potato field moment. That's when he sees something that nobody else has seen, and he thinks it might be the key to some kind of alternate means of propulsion, electrical propulsion. And there's other background that I'm skipping over here, but that was his seminal moment, where he observed something that nobody else had observed, and he spends the rest of his life basically trying to prove out what he thinks he had observed there, because he thinks he has observed a way of producing essentially artificial gravity. So I'll go back to Einstein here for a minute, and I'm jumping around here, and I'm sorry to be oversimplifying, but because this story gets really wild. So In the latter years of his life, Einstein was working on something called the unified field theory. And I can explain that by first expressing that over the course of the 19th century, it was determined that electricity and magnetism were the same side of one coin that became then known as electromagnetism. And that's one of the four fundamental forces in the universe that we recognize. At the time, the other fundamental force was gravity. We didn't really understand the nuclear forces until a little later. That comes in the 20th century. But Einstein, in the 30s or so, he was looking for what he called the unified field theory, which would find the mathematical connection between electromagnetism and gravity. And what Brown discovered, which he then developed into a device that he called the gravitator, using a series of what are called capacitors based on that observation that he had made, he believed that he had actually found the physical manifestation of the unified field theory and a way to produce an artificial gravitational field by electrical means.
So he came to this conclusion even though Einstein never completed, to his satisfaction, a unified field theory.
That's true, yeah. So you've correctly identified a bit of a dichotomy here, that on the one hand, we don't have the mathematical foundation for it, but on the other hand, we do seem to have the physical evidence. And whether or not we actually have that physical evidence is the curtain behind which the whole Townsend Brown story begins to disappear. But that's the genesis of the story, and as I said at the outset, that was the story that I was introduced to that night in 2002 when I was finishing up the Farnsworth biography that says check out Townsend Brown, telling me to check out this guy Townsend Brown, that the work that he had done defied physical laws, but nevertheless the government had classified it, and that you can see the evidence of it in hazy blue lights flying over the Nevada desert and in an appliance manufactured by the Sharper Image called the Ionic Breeze Air Purifier. So that was my introduction in 2002 to a man named Thomas Townsend Brown, who believed he had discovered a way of producing synthetic gravitational fields back in the 1920s, roughly the same time that Philo Farnsworth figured out how to bounce electrons around in a vacuum tube. So we had these two interesting manifestations of Einstein's cosmology, one occurring to Philo Farnsworth and the other occurring to Townsend Brown in roughly the same time period.
We'll talk more about Mr. Townsend Brown in our next segment. And our guests will return for more discussion on these subjects on the After the Paracast podcast. And you can get it if you subscribe to the Paracast Plus. Go to theparacast.plus to sign up. Theparacast.plus. Paul Shatskin, Gene Steinberg, Tim Swartz. You're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Do you love reading about the mysteries of the universe? Do you wonder what secrets are hidden in the shadows of our own planet? If so, you won't want to miss these two amazing books by Tim R. Swartz and Sean Castile. In Mimics, The Others Among Us, you'll explore the world of the mimics of man, beings that can look like us but are not. They've been among us since the beginning of history, hiding in plain sight, influencing our culture in ways we can scarcely imagine. In Alien Artifacts, Incredible Evidence of Exotic Material from UFO Encounters, you'll discover the so-called hard evidence of UFOs that's been available for study this entire time, but for the most part has been ignored. These two books will open your eyes to a hidden reality that has been right in front of our eyes all along. That's Mimics, The Others Among Us, and Alien Artifacts, Incredible Evidence of Exotic Material from UFO Encounters by Tim R. Swartz and Sean Castile. Available now on Amazon.com.
Wellness and self-care doesn't have to be complicated. So keep it simple and take good care of yourself with Sunny Bay heating pads. Our heating pads soothe pains in the neck, back, and shoulders while relaxing muscles and increasing blood circulation. Sunny Bay heating pads have always been made in the USA and hand-filled to perfection with the highest quality materials. Sunny Bay heating pads are the perfect wellness gift for loved ones or yourself. See all of our high-quality products at sunny-bay.com, including heated body pads, neck pillows, heated neck and body wraps, and our stress-reducing lavender line. They're all affordable, durable, and in stock now and ready for immediate shipping direct from sunny-bay.com. Read our trusted, authentic, and real reviews at sunny-bay.com or just search for Sunny Bay Heating Pad. To your good health and wellness from Sunny Bay.